Hari Bol.
Got a little bit.
Yeah, water would be good. Yeah, please. I have some, but not much. Ran out.
Tirata Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai. Gopijana Ballabha Kribara Thari. Gopijana Ballabha Kribara Thari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopijana Ballabha Kribara Thari. Gopijana Ballabha Kribara Thari. Yashoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana Yashoda. Yashoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana Yashoda. Yamuna Tira Baracharya. Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopijana Ballabha Kribara Thari. Gopijana Ballabha Kribara Thari. Yashoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Baracharyam. Yamuna Tira Baracharyam. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya.
Jain Zulu Stomishta Par Paramahamsa. Pare Vrajaka Charja Asto Tarasata Shri Shri Mad His Divine Grace. Of High Charanada Vinda Bhaktivinoda Swamishra Prabhupada Ki ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya Save the Whole World Shri Prabhupada Ki Jain Zulu Stomishta Par Paramahamsa. Pare Vrajaka Charja Asto Tarasata Shri Shri Mad His Divine Grace. Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Ki Anantakoti Vaishnavinda Ki Nama Charger Shri Das Thakur Ki Premsa Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadar Harasi Sadhigaur Bhakti Vindaki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gokopada Shamakund Radha Kund Giri Govardhana Ki Braj Bhumi Shri Vindama Dhamma Ki Navdeep Maipur Dhamma Ki Purushottam Chetra Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Ganga Mai Ki Jamuna Mai Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Tulasi Mahalani Ki Sama Veta Bhakti Vindaki Jai Nitai Gopremanandi. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious, Lord, be to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. All glorious to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namo Vishtapada. Krishna Stapadre Sri Mata Namasama Shabbat Hare Vaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sa va ayam Brahma Mahad Vimrigya Savarayam Brahma Mahad Vimrigya Savarayam Brahma Mahad Vimrigya Kaivalya Nirvana Sukhanubhuti Kaivalya Nirvana Sukhanubhuti Kaivalya Nirvana Sukhanubhuti Savarayam Brahma Mahad Vimrigya Kaivalya Nirvana Sukhanubhuti Priya Suhrid Va Kalu Matuleya Priya Suhrid Va Kalu Matuleya Priya Suhrid Va Kalu Matuleya Atmahaniyo Vidhi Krid Gurus Cha Atmahaniyo Riddhi Krid Gurus Cha Atma Haniyo Vid Krid Gurushcha Priya Suhrid Bakalu Matuleya Atma Haniyo Vid Krid Gurushcha Sava Ayam Brahma Mahad Vimrigya Kaivalya Nirvana Sukhanubhuti Priya Suhrid Vakalu Matuleya Atma Haniyo Vidikrit Gurushcha Sava Ayam Habrahma Mahad Vimrigya Kaivalya Nirvana Sukhanubhuti Priya Suhrid Bakalu Matuleya Atma Haniyo Vid Khrid Sorry Atma Haniyo Vidi Khrid Gurushcha
Savayam Brahma Mahat Vimrigya Savayam
That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Va, also. I am this. Brahma, the impersonal Brahman, which is an emanation from Krishna. Mahat, by great personalities. Vimrigya, searched for. Kaivalya, oneness. Nirvana Sukha, of transcendental happiness. Anubhuti, the source of practical experience. Priya, very, very dear. Suhrit, well-wisher. Va, of you. Kahlu, indeed. Matuleya, the son of a maternal uncle. Atma, exactly like body and soul together. Ahaniya, worshipable, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidikrit, yet he serves you as an order carrier. Guru, your Supreme Advisor. Cha, as well. From translation. The impersonal Brahman is Krishna himself, because Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman. Does anyone know a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that explains this? From the 14th chapter, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. He says, I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. He is the origin of the transcendental bliss sought by great saintly persons, yet he, the Supreme Person, is your most dear friend and constant well-wisher, and is intimately related to you as the son of your maternal uncle. Indeed, he is always like your body and soul. He is worshipable, yet he acts as your servant and sometimes as your spiritual master. Responsively, please. The impersonal Brahman is Krishna himself, because Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman. He is the origin of the transcendental bliss sought by great saintly persons. Yet he, the Supreme Person, is your most dear friend and constant well-wisher, and is intimately related to you as the son of your maternal uncle. Indeed, he is always like your body and soul. He is worshipable, yet he acts as your servant and sometimes as your spiritual master. So can anyone think of examples where Krishna was acting as the servant of the Pandavas? Yeah, he was Arjuna's charioteer. Anything else? Only one thing? A little bit late. I'm sort of really blocked up. He was a messenger, yeah. He went to the court of the Kauravas to try to convince them not to have the war. Yeah? So there are many, many examples actually there in the scriptures of how Krishna acted as the servant. And what about as a spiritual master? How did he act as the spiritual master of the Pandavas? There's two examples that come to mind, but there's many. Yeah, he recited Bhagavad Gita. The whole Bhagavad Gita is Krishna acting as the guru of Arjuna. And we see that Arjuna, he says, Shishasteham salimam tvam prapanam. Now I'm your disciple and the soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Then also we see that before the passing of Bhishma Dev, that Krishna was also instructing Yudhisthira. But there's many, many examples you can see throughout the Mahabharata. Many examples of how Krishna was instructing and guiding the Pandavas. And actually we see that the Pandavas accepted Krishna, only Krishna, as their guide. And whatever Krishna said, they would do that. So throughout their lives, they accepted Krishna as their guide. Prabhupada's purport. I was actually expecting to speak on the next verse. I asked Surya Gopal yesterday what verse I was doing, and he said 50. So, yeah, they're similar. Purport. There is always a difference of opinion about the absolute truth. One class of transcendentalists conclude that the absolute truth is impersonal, and another class concludes that the absolute truth is a person. Which one's correct? Huh? So which one's correct? Is he a person or not a person?
Person.
But he's actually both. He has his impersonal feature, but ultimately he's a person, as we'll see Prabhupada's explaining here. In Bhagavad Gita, the absolute truth is accepted as the supreme person. Indeed, that supreme person himself, Lord Krishna, instructs in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, mata paratanam nyanyat. This impersonal Brahman is my partial manifestation. So it's coming from Krishna, but it's only a part of Krishna. It's not the whole. Yeah? And there is no truth superior to me. That same Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acted as the supreme friend and relative of the Pandavas. And sometimes he even acted as their servant by carrying a letter from the Pandavas to Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Because Krishna was the well-wisher of the Pandavas, he also acted as guru by becoming the spiritual master of Arjuna. Arjuna accepted Krishna as his spiritual master, Sishasteham Salimam Tvam Prapanam. And Krishna sometimes chastised him. Can anyone think of when Krishna chastised Arjuna? Very nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. Anyone know the verse? Krishna says, Asachan Navasachastram, Pragyavadam Shapasase, Gata Sumagata Sumcha. While speaking learned words, you're lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. The wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. So he's saying that, Arjuna, you're presenting yourself as being a learned person, but actually you're behaving like a fool because you're glorifying that which is not worthy of glorifying. Because you're talking about the body. You're lamenting about the loss of the body, but actually a wise person understands that the body's temporary. And that's what Krishna explains to Arjuna in the second chapter. And sometimes Krishna, for example, the Lord said, Asachan avasachatram pragyavaram sabasase. While speaking learned words, you're mourning for that which is not worthy of grief. The Lord also said, Kutastva kashmalamidam vishame samupashtitam. My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? Such was the intimate relationship between the Pandavas and Krishna. In the same way, a pure devotee of the Lord is always with Krishna through thick and thin. This, his way of life is Krishna. This is the statement of the authority of, this is the statement of the authority Sri Narada Muni. So, very, very wonderful description here, where Narada Muni is talking with Yudhisthira Maharaj. And we see, like, we've gone through now 10 chapters of the Bhagavatam, from the first chapter in this canto through to this chapter now, number 10, which have been describing the glorious pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj, or the glorious character and quality of Prahlad Maharaj and his devotional service, and how he was completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He just, no matter what was happening, no matter what his father was trying to do to him, he just took shelter of Krishna at every moment. And a very, very glorious description of a glorious devotee. And at the end of it, of course, they discuss the benefits of hearing this pastime, and how, you know, by listening attentively to this pastime, one can become just like Prahlad. And the Pandavas are all considered to be pure devotees of Krishna, very, you know, like pure alloyed devotees of Krishna, Krishna's eternal associates. So it seems that Narada Muni understood Yudhisthira Maharaj's mind, because it's natural that a pure devotee like Yudhisthira Maharaj would be thinking, well, Prahlad Maharaj is so fortunate, he's such an advanced devotee, but we're not fortunate like that. We're actually very unfortunate. But now in these three verses, 48, 49, and 50, we see that Narada Muni is actually saying, no, but you, the Pandavas, you are the most fortunate. Because Krishna, he lives in your house. Krishna, you know, we see that, like, after the, you know, like, Krishna would come and stay in the house of the Pandavas for many months at a time. And after the battle of Kurukshetra, he stayed there for some time to placate all his relatives there in Hastinapur. But then also, as they were leaving, Yudhisthira Maharaj, as Krishna was about to leave, Yudhisthira Maharaj came and asked Krishna, please stay a little bit longer. Actually, that was a little bit late, because then what happened was, while he was staying there, he went down to the battlefield at Kurukshetra, because Bhishma Dev was just about to leave his body. He and all the Pandavas, they went down there. And it's described, there's different descriptions, but one of the descriptions I've read mentions how Bhishma Dev spoke for 54 days. So almost 2 months he was speaking on all these different topics, especially about Dharma, of a Kshatriya, of a Vaishya, of a Brahmana, a Shudra, you know, all these different. He spoke about Varnashram. And so, you know, Yudhisthira Maharaj was listening, but also Krishna was there. And then they went back to the palace in Hastinapur after Bhishma Dev passed away, and Krishna spent some more time there. So he spent a significant amount of time. And yet Yudhisthira Maharaj, out of his natural humility, because this is one of the qualities that develops in a devotee, is humility. And Prabhupada discusses this quality of humility in many places, but in particular in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 12, Prabhupada is discussing the importance of humility for a devotee. And he explains that without humility, one cannot have knowledge. Because we see in this material world, people have so much knowledge, you know, like people who are scientists and IT experts and doctors and lawyers and all that. They have so much knowledge. But generally we find they're not very humble. generally you'll find that they think they're, you know, like, you know, I mean, so often we have the experience where we might be interacting with someone from a particular field of, you know, of expertise, and it's obvious, you know, that they're not humble. I'll give you an example. I remember years ago, I was going to, might have been the Alfred Hospital. And I was doing this, getting these stress tests done on my heart and lungs and things like that. And they were sort of giving me instruction on how to do it, you know, on what I'm supposed to do. And at the end, you know, because I just did the test and was breathing and whatever I had to do. And then the nurse said, "Oh, just see what we made you do." You know, she's taking responsibility for the outcome. And we see this is quite common in the material world, is everyone thinks themselves the doer. And as Krishna explains in the Gita, these activities are actually carried out by the material nature. But the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks themselves the doer. Just like this body, you know, we think we're controlling the body. But how much control do we have of the body? Really? Stop breathing for an hour or so and see how it works. Stop! Can you stop blinking your eyelids? Can you stop your hair from growing? Even the simplest of things we can't do. Yet, we think we're the controller. We think we're the enjoyer. But actually, as Krishna explains, the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks themselves the doer of activities which in reality are carried out by the material nature. So this whole world is functioning under the sort of oversight, if you like, of the material nature. The whole world is functioning due to the potency of the material nature. And even this body is going on remote, automatically. You see, like, the body's growing, the body's aging, the hair's growing, the fingers. So all this is going on seemingly automatically by the material nature. But Krishna says also, he said, Maya Jakshena Prakrite Suyate Sacharacharam, that this material nature is my energy, it's working under my supervision, under my direction. So it's not automatic. Krishna puts it into place. And we see that Prabhupada in his purports, he'll many times talk about, you know, so many wonderful things in this material world. Just like, you know, there's computers, we've got all this technology here with the sound system and stuff. There's cars, there's planes, there's all sorts of wonderful machines. And they look like they're functioning automatically. But if you take out the spirit soul, what happens? It's just a lump of matter. It can't function. And it's the same with the body. If you remove the spirit soul from the body, it is just a lump of matter. And it will decay in due course. So we can see that by the influence of false ego, people are bewildered about the reality of this material world, and they think that they are the controller and they are the enjoyer. But actually, we can understand that Krishna, he's actually the only controller. He's actually the only enjoyer. And he's actually the only friend. This is a point that Krishna states at the end of the fifth chapter of the Gita. So, Yudhisthira has this mood because he's a pure, unalloyed devotee of Krishna. He's understanding, I'm not the doer. But at the same point, even though he's a very, very greatly advanced devotee, he's also not thinking that I'm fortunate. He's thinking, I'm most unfortunate, because, you know, and he gives different reasons in different places, but, and we see this is quite common with pure unalloyed devotees, is they're thinking that others are more fortunate than them, because they have humility. Because, as I was saying, Prabhupada points out, through humility, one can actually develop knowledge. And this knowledge helps us to understand who we are. It helps us to understand who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. It helps us to understand our relationship with matter, with time, with all these different elements, but also our relationship with Krishna. And with this knowledge, see, there's different types of knowledge. There's material knowledge, which I was talking about before, where you can understand matter. But ultimately, that doesn't help you unless you understand matter in relationship with Krishna. Because if you understand that ultimately matter, Krishna says, Maya Tatami Dham Savam Jagadavyakta Murti. Now, this the material nature is my energy. It's coming from me. And it pervades, you know, by my energy, I'm pervading the entire universe. So someone understands that actually matter, what it's about, is Krishna's energy, and its purpose is to serve Krishna. They actually have transcendental knowledge because they understand the nature of things. But someone who just understands, what it's like a microphone, how a microphone functions, what's inside of here, and all that, I know what's inside of this because I used to work in this industry, and I know how it functions. But that doesn't mean that I actually understand the purpose of it. You know, someone who has that knowledge may not understand the purpose. But as devotees of Krishna, we understand the purpose of the microphone is to amplify transcendental sound. And that way, it's using this microphone or whatever it is we may have for its proper purpose. Because everything is connected with Krishna. Krishna says in the Gita that, what's that verse? Aham savasya prabhavo matasavam bhavatate iti matvabhijante mam buddha bhavas manvita. That I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me. So if we understand that, if we understand that everything is nothing but Krishna's energy, then we should understand how to utilize that. And so he says, Buddha Bhavasa Manvita, that the wise knowing this, they engage in my service with great determination. So someone who actually has intelligence, someone who actually understands things as they are, knows how to utilize things for the pleasure of Krishna. And we see this is Yudhisthira's position. He's understanding. Actually all the Pandavas are understanding Krishna's position. They're understanding that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that our business is to serve him. And as Prabhupada says, he uses an interesting term at the end of the purport. He says, a pure devotee of the Lord is always with Krishna through thick and thin. This is the life of Krishna. And we see that there were many times throughout the Pandavas' lives where they were in difficulty, and they took shelter of Krishna. One such story was when the Pandavas were in exile. They were in exile for 13 years. 12 years they were just in ordinary exile, and in 1 year they had to be incognito, where no one knew where they were. Or even knew who they were. And so, during that first 12 years, Duryodhan was always looking how to do harm to the Pandavas. And he thought this is a really good opportunity because they don't have the kingdom, they don't have any protection, they're just out in the forest, so now I can really get them and, rub it in, rub salt into the wound. And of course, this just made Bhimsen just more and more determined to destroy the Kauravas. But at one point, there's many stories of how the Kauravas were just trying to especially Duryodhana and his brothers and friends were just trying to humiliate and cause harm to the Pandavas, and invariably he'd wind up being humiliated himself. There's one story where the Kauravas were they attacked because they were trying to cause harm to the Pandavas, but somehow or other they attacked a Gandharva called Chitrarata, and this Gandharva, he actually captured them and he bound up Duryodhana, and all the others went running away. And Bhimsen, he was thinking, oh, this is wonderful, such a great opportunity now that we don't have to fight now because he's finished, But then Yudhisthira, this is the quality of Yudhisthira, he's saying, no, he's our kinsman, and we have to protect the honor of our family by saving him. So then what happened is because the Pandavas, for some reason, they didn't have their weapons with them. And Arjuna went down there, and he simply took a torch, like a stick with a flame on the end of it. And he defeated this Kshatriya, with his torch. He actually used it as an astra. He completely defeated him. And he had Duryodhan and the others released. And so even that is Duryodhan, even though he was completely humiliated by the power of Arjuna, even though Arjuna was trying to save him, he still bore this enmity. Even though Yudhisthira was wanting to save him from a difficult situation, he still bore this enmity. Because he actually saw, to some extent, he had some idea of the potency of the Pandavas, and he felt diminished in their presence. And he couldn't stand that because he was an envious-natured person. He couldn't stand to see someone in a better position, couldn't stand to see someone being more glorified or someone who was more glorious than him. He had to pull them down at every opportunity. And one time that he tried to do that, I thought was a very good example of how the devotees take shelter of Krishna through thick and thin, is at one point Devasa Muni came to visit the court of the Kauravas, and he offered Duryodhana a benediction. And then so Duryodhana said, I'd like you to go to visit the Pandavas estate, because Duryodhana always knew where the Pandavas were, because obviously he wanted to know where they were, whenever he had some scheme in his mind of how to inflict harm upon the Pandavas, he'd know exactly where to go. So his spies were constantly keeping track of the Pandavas. And then so he asked Devasa Muni to go down there and after the Pandavas had finished the meal, because naturally as Kshatriyas, the Pandavas would want to serve the sadhu, and he went there with his 10,000 disciples, so he wanted to serve. So Devasa Muni, he turned up at the Pandavas camp just after they'd finished eating, after Draupadi had finished eating. And Draupadi had this benediction. She had this mystic pot whereby as long as she hadn't eaten, she could feed unlimited people. It didn't matter how many people come, she could feed them. But once she'd finished, the pot was, there was nothing left. And she could, as long as she hadn't eaten, she should just keep, dishing out from the pot. Thousands and thousands of people. And so Devasa Muni turned up just after she'd eaten. And then, he said to Yudhisthira Maharaj, I've come here with my disciples, please make proper arrangements for us, we're hungry. And so Yudhisthira said, please, you go take down to the river, take your bath, and then come back and we'll make proper arrangements. And so Draupadi was in anxiety. She was thinking, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? I've just eaten and there's nothing in the pot. She's getting all concerned like this. And then so immediately she started to call out for Krishna. And Krishna came. And she explained, the Pandavas, they explained the situation to Krishna. And then Draupadi was saying, but there's nothing left. I've eaten my meal. There's nothing to feed them. And so Krishna says, are you sure? Are you sure there's nothing left? And yes, I've finished. The pot's empty. And Krishna says, have a look in the pot. Just look in one time. Have a look in the pot to see. And she looked in the pot, and there's just a small piece of spinach stuck on the side of the pot. And Krishna says, quickly, give it to me. So Krishna, he took that, and he ate it. And because of the love of Draupadi, when she's cooking this and offering to Krishna, he became fully satisfied. And there's a nice verse in the Vedas where it says, Yasmin tuste jagat tushta. When the Lord becomes satisfied, the whole universe is satisfied. So instantly, Devasa Muni and his 10,000 disciples, they became fully satisfied. They couldn't even think of eating a grain of rice. They were so satisfied. So they were embarrassed. And they didn't want to go back to Yudhisthira Maharaj and say, we're satisfied, we don't want anything to eat. So they sort of quietly snuck away. So the point is with the pure devotees, in any situation of life, they take shelter of the Lord. And of course, for devotees, we find that when we're in a distressful situation, it's very easy to take shelter of Krishna because, there's this problem, there's that problem, Krishna, please save me. But we see with the great souls, in any situation, they take shelter of Krishna. Whether they're happy, whether they're sad, they always take shelter of Krishna because they understand that Krishna is their only shelter. They understand that, and this is the point that that is being made here in these verses, that they see Krishna as everything. Krishna matta, Krishna pitta, Krishna pranadan. They see Krishna as everything. He's their mother, he's their father, he's very life and soul. And in every circumstance, they take shelter of Krishna. You know, when something nice happens, they think this is Krishna's mercy. When they're in calamity, oh Krishna, please save me. And it's interesting that we see this is, you know, at the end of this story of Prahlad Maharaj, because we see that in every circumstance, Prahlad Maharaj, he took shelter of the Lord. You know, he was at the school of the Gurukula Sundara and Amaka, and he's teaching his school friends about Krishna and about chanting the name of Krishna, the benefits of chanting the name of Krishna. You know, he's being thrown into various difficult circumstances by the arrangement of his father's cohorts. And whatever happened, he took shelter of Krishna. He didn't even see these as calamitous situations. He wasn't even concerned about they were trying to pierce him with weapons, or, you know, have him attacked by ferocious animals, or thrown into a pit of snakes, or anything, or boiled in oil, or thrown off a cliff, or anything like that. He was just so absorbed in thought of Krishna, 24 hours a day. And so this is the glory of a great devotee, is no matter what happens, and what happens in their life, they just take shelter of Krishna. And they see everything as just simply a manifestation of Krishna's energy, whether in one form or another. There's even, I remember reading a purport years ago, and Prabhupada was describing some manifestation of Krishna's potency. And then, you know, just like Prabhupada's kind of, I guess his contemplation, his meditation was coming out in the purport. And he said, this is a not so attractive form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he was seeing this connection. He's always connecting everything with Krishna. And I remember, you know, when I first joined ISKCON many years ago, that everything, we tried to connect everything to Krishna. You know, Prabhu, can you clean Krishna's temple? Prabhu, can you wash Krishna's pot? You know, we tried to connect it with Krishna. We saw everything as a manifestation, or everything as belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is stated by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also. He says, Bhaktaran Gyakatapa Sam Savalopa Maheshram Suriram Savabhutamam Gyatvamam Shantim Rishi. So he says, I'm the only enjoyer of all sacrifices, all austerities. I'm the enjoyer. Savaloka Maheshwaram, that I'm the proprietor, I'm the owner of all planets, everyone on the planets. And Suriram Sarvabhutanam, that I'm the only friend, and, you know, the well-wishing friend of all living entities. And then he says to Arjuna, Gyatvamam Shantim Richati, knowing this, or knowing me like this, one can actually attain peace. So, and this is a really important point, because we see in this material world, everyone's hankering for peace. You know, they have so many, you know, wars going on all the time, and people saying, you know, we should have peace, we should, you know, let's try to find a truce, let's try to find an amicable solution to this. So they're always hankering for peace, but they don't know how to find it. Because everyone's actually in competition to Krishna. They're all trying to be the controller, they're all trying to be the enjoyer. And with this mentality of trying to be the controller and the enjoyer, the only thing you'll know is disturbance, because this is not our natural position. We are not the supreme controller. We are not the supreme enjoyer. We are not the supreme proprietor. We're actually servants of God. And until we can realize that position, we'll never know peace. And this is the point that Krishna's making to Arjuna in the fifth chapter. If you understand that I am the supreme controller and enjoyer, that I am the proprietor of everything, and that I am the only friend. But you look at a war, for instance. What happens in a war is some group of individuals see themselves as the enemy of another group of individuals. And you'll see that certain persons will align themselves with one side, or countries will align themselves with one side, other countries will align themselves with the other side. These are my friends, these are my enemies. It just goes on. You see, with kids in the playground, you know, this one's my friend, this one's my enemy. And therefore what happens? They fight and they cry. And so we see this at so many levels. You know, at all levels in material society, we see this concept of friends and enemies. Where one's my friend, one's my enemy, and we fight as a result. Yeah. And as a result of this, so much calamity, so much disturbance, so much dissatisfaction is coming. And it all gets down to the simple point: is they think that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am the friend. And there's a nice verse in the 10th canto which discusses this. Where Lord Brahma and the Devatas are talking about how that ultimately in this world, if people neglect the lotus feet of Krishna, they'll never understand the actual situation. And he talks about how it's vimukta manina, how they're thinking vimukta, that they're very, very elevated, they're very advanced, they're liberated. But he said, avishuddha buddhaya, because of their inner impure intelligence, they don't actually understand the actual situation. And that impure intelligence can mean different things. It can mean one thing is they're contaminated by material desires, which we find also in the seventh chapter, Nate vidu swata katim hi Vishnu. They don't know what the supreme destination is. Why? Because they're contaminated with material desires. They're thinking that sense gratification is the aim of life. And if one thinks that to enjoy the self in this material world, that is the aim of life, they will never understand what the goal of life is because they have a different idea. And we also see this avishuddha buddhaya also can refer to impersonalists, who think that to merge into the Brahman is the goal of life. They also don't achieve satisfaction. And there's a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that points this is Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakliya Shanta Krishna Bhakta Niskama Atta Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakliya Shanta. So it says Krishna Bhakta Niskama Atta Eva Shanta. Because the Krishna Bhakta has no material desires, then Atta Eva, certainly, indeed, he is peaceful. But Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami. So the bhuktis, they're after sense enjoyment. The muktis are after liberation. And the cities, they want some perfection in the world. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, lusty. They're all lusty. Sakaliya shanta. Therefore, certainly they cannot be peaceful. So if someone is after something in this material world, apart from Krishna, they can never be happy. The only thing that will make us happy in this material world, and this is demonstrated in this point, in this story here of Prahlad Maharaj, the only thing that will make us happy in this material world is to take shelter of Krishna. At every step of the way, whether it's happiness, distress, heat, cold, whatever it is, Because we see Krishna points out also in the Gita that, Matra spasas to kunteya, sitoshna sukha dukhata, agamapa inonyadas, tang titikshvasa bharata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course of time are like the appearance and disappearance of summer and winter seasons. Right? Like, I live in northern New South Wales and it's hot up there right now. Down here, it's like 14 degrees. Yeah? Up there, it's 30 plus. But it's just sensory perception. Because for one person, it's very, very nice. Like, most of you have just got one layer of clothing on. I come in here with three or four layers of clothing on. But that's just due to my senses. Ultimately, it's all the same thing because it's just one person sees it as favorable, one person sees it as unfavorable. It doesn't matter. It's just sensory perception. And as Krishna says to Arjuna, tongues to tikshasa bharata, these things must be tolerated because they're all external. They don't really matter in the ultimate issue. But what matters for us is to take shelter of Krishna at every step of the way. Whatever's going on in our life, whatever we're doing, and Krishna, he also mentions in the ninth chapter, very, very nice verses in the ninth chapter, Yad karoshi yadash nasi yash johosi dasi yad yad tapashashi kuntaya tad karusha marapanam. That whatever you do, whatever you offer, but whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, whatever austerities you perform, you do that, O son of Kunti, is offering for me. And then in the next verse, he explains, Subha Subha Fareere Vam Moksha Sekam Bandarai. What is it? Sanya Shaya Vimukto Mama Paisasi. That in this way you'll become freed from the reactions to inauspicious and auspicious activities. Because, the common concept is all, you know, like the mode of goodness kind of concept is don't do inauspicious things, do auspicious things. That's good. It's better than doing, you know, sinful activities, but still it's binding because you become conditioned to the mode of goodness. But he's saying by doing it for me, by doing it for Krishna, you'll become freed from the reactions to auspicious and inauspicious works. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and thus you will come to me. So this is the difference between, you know, you see some people, they want to perform mode of goodness activities. And even some people, you know, they want to perform transcendental activities, like they might meditate on the impersonal Brahman or something like that. But here in these verses, we see how Narad Muni is showing Yudhisthira Maharaj the difference between a transcendentalist and a devotee, a pure devotee. Because ultimately, a pure devotee has no other thought than satisfaction of Krishna. Whereas a transcendentalist is still looking at their own benefit. How can I become freed from the influence of the modes of material nature? How can I become freed from the mind, the senses, all this sort of stuff? But for a devotee, that doesn't matter. A devotee only has one thought, and that is how to please Krishna. And we see this is epitomized by the residents of Vrindavan. Their only thought, they don't even care if Krishna's God or not. That's beside the point. All they want to do is please Krishna. And so we see in all their activities, they're you know, just endeavoring. Like we see Mother Yasoda. This is described very nicely in the beginning of the 10th canto. How, you know, Krishna is going to the other gopis' houses and stealing yogurt and butter and things like that. And she's thinking, oh, she's doing that because he doesn't like the milk I make. So I have to make better milk because I want him to be happy with the milk I make. So we see how she's just constantly absorbed in this thought of how to please Krishna. And all the residents of Vrindavan are like that. Whatever their relationship is with Krishna, they're always absorbed in the thought of how to please Krishna. And this is the mood of a pure devotee. No other thought in their mind but how to satisfy Krishna. And this is very important for us to understand this. It's like in all our activities in devotional service, analyze, is this pleasing to Krishna or is this not pleasing to Krishna? Or, you know, sometimes that might seem a bit too abstract. So we can think, is this pleasing to Prabhupada? Is this not pleasing to Prabhupada? Or is this pleasing to my spiritual master? Is this not pleasing to my spiritual master? Because, as it says, Kintu Prabhu Ya Priya Vitasha, Guru is very dear to Krishna because he's given his life to canvas on Krishna's behalf. So, you know, in all our activities, always try to look at, would this be pleasing to Krishna? Would Krishna like, or would Prabhupada like me to do this or not? And in this way, you know, we get to the point where we're not doing activities for ourselves. We're doing activities for the pleasure of Krishna. And in this way, we become very, very dear to Krishna. So there's also another interesting aspect to what's going on here. This is commented on by Jiva Goswami in relation to this verse because it's saying how, let's go back to this verse. The impersonal Brahman is Krishna himself because Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman. And so he's the original transcendental bliss. So it's pointing out, you know, how Krishna is actually, he's the origin of everything. And sometimes there are versions in the Vedas that indicate that Krishna is actually an incarnation of Vishnu. But from the Bhagavatam, we can understand this is actually not correct. According to the Bhagavatam, and this is explained very clearly in the third chapter of the first canto. The third chapter of the first canto is called Krishna is the source of all incarnations. So it goes through explaining quite a number of different incarnations of Krishna, of the Lord. And then in the 28th verse, it's a very significant verse. It says, Ete changsha kalak pungsam Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Was Indrari Vyakalam Lokam Mridyanti Yuge Yuge. That, but of all these expansions and parts of expansions being described here, it says Krishna is the original. And he appears whenever there is some disturbance in the universe. So Jiva Goswami highlights that this is actually the essence of the instructions of the Bhagavatam. Especially this one line, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. So Krishna, Bhagavan Swayam, he is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no one beyond him. Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadi Radi Govinda Savakarana Karanam, as explained by Lord Brahma. Ishvara Paramakrishna, the controller. Krishna is the supreme control. There's no control. Parama means the highest. There's nothing beyond him. Yeah? Ishvara Parama, Sachidananda Vigraha. He has a form which is full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Yeah? Anadi, Adi, Govind. Adi means the origin. He's the origin of all other origins. He has no other origin. He doesn't come from anyone else. And then he says, Savakaranakar, and he's the cause of all causes. So this is Krishna's position. And this is explained in great detail by Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas, that this Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. And he actually says that this is the essential verse of the Bhagavatam. And this is the verse by which all other verses of the Bhagavatam must be understood. But he makes a really interesting comment in the Krishna Sandarbha, the verse 29th verse of the Krishna Sandarbha, that actually for a Vaishnava, for a Gaudiya Vaishnava, he understands all scriptures from this verse, this Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, that all scriptures say the same point, that Krishna is the supreme original personality of Godhead. He has no other origin. He is the one from whom everything else has come. And we see that this is also being explained by Krishna's Kaviraj in the fifth chapter of the Adi Leela. And this chapter is called The Glories of Nityananda Balaram. And there's a nice verse there where it mentions that, how's it go? I've just gone blank on the verse. I know the verse well. But it's saying that how Krishna, he's the Ekale Isha Krishna Arsa Biprita Ya Yarchina Se Taichin Karinirtya. That Ekale is one. Ishvara, controller, Krishna. There's only one controller, and that's Krishna. Arsa Biprita. All others, they dance as he makes them do so. And we see that. If you look at the different manifestations of God, the Purusha avatars, where do the Purusha avatars come from? Anyone know? Where they come from? Mahavishnu. Yeah, they expand from the Chatavyuha. Where does the Chatavyuha come from? Sankarshan. Yeah? Where does Sankarshan come from? First Chatavyuha. The first Chatavyuha comes from Mahashankarshan, which comes from Balaram. So we can see these are expansions of Balaram. And who is Balaram? What's his position? He's addressed as the Supreme Personality of Servant of Godhead. So all these Purusha avatars, all these Chatavyuha, all these they're expanding in so many ways, but they're coming from the Supreme Personality of Servant of God. They have a function to serve God. But Krishna, Ekala Ishvara Krishna, he's the only joy, he's the only controller, he's the only master. Everything else is expanding from Krishna. So we see how this verse is also confirming that even the Brahman, so many people are aspiring for Brahman, but even the Brahman, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, it's coming, I'm the basis of that, it's coming from me. So this is a very, very important discussion. And this verse, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. This is actually Jiva Goswami calls this the emperor verse, because it's the greatest verse for a Vaishnava to understand that everything is ultimately dependent upon Krishna. No other form, not Vishnu, not whoever it might be, Narayan, whatever. It's all dependent upon Krishna because he is the original Supreme Person of Godhead. He is the sum and bonum. Everything comes from him. And therefore, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas understanding this, coming in the line of our Acharyas, understanding this, we accept that Krishna is the Supreme Person of Godhead and he is the goal of our life. Okay, I'll finish there. Any comments, questions?
Draupadi's pot and how...
I'm not hearing very well, sorry.
Just when you're talking about the pastime with Draupadi's pot and how Krishna said if there's anything left in because there's just a little morsel and Krishna took it and because he was satisfied, the whole universe is satisfied at that time. How can we actually properly understand this? Because it seems that nobody's ever satisfied in this world for very long, and yet there's so many devotees on the planet rendering devotional service to Krishna, and yet there's always so many problems in the world, which means that people obviously aren't satisfied. So how can we actually properly understand that? When Krishna's satisfied, everyone's satisfied.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question. It's a good question. It's just like... There's a pastime mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know that this pastime when Lord Ramachandra shot the arrow and went through the trees and liberated the trees. And there's discussion there about how when the Lord comes that the whole universe is liberated, yet it fills up again with conditioned souls. So I would guess it's probably something in the realm of that. That, you know, because obviously it's a statement in Shastra, so we have to accept it's true. Yet, due to the unlimited material desires, then people again become dissatisfied. Just like during the Renaissance period in the world, it was a time of great learning and a great, you know, development in the world. But that was the time when Lord Chaitanya appeared. So, you know, if we were to look historically at the different times when Krishna was on the planet, we'd probably find, I mean, I'm not a historian, so I don't know, but you'd probably find that there was a time of great prosperity and happiness in the world because of Krishna's presence. And even you can see when Krishna appeared, how all the constellations, the moon, you know, when Lord Chaitanya appeared, the moon was full. When Lord Krishna appeared, not when Lord Chaitanya, when Lord Chaitanya was an eclipse, but it was considered very, very auspicious because of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. So we see how when the Lord appears, then all the various constellations and different, you know, astrological things arrange themselves to be perfect because of that. So, yeah, I can only guess it would be a similar kind of an idea, is that yes, they become satisfied, but because of these unlimited material desires, they again become dissatisfied. Yeah. I couldn't give you a better answer than that. I don't recall reading anything by the Acharyas on that point. I mean, I'm sure they make comments on it, but I don't recall reading anything like that.
There's those verses that says like when you put food, it's like there's those verses that elaborate on it, that when you feed the stomach, the whole body becomes nourished. When you water the tree, the root of a tree, the whole tree becomes nourished.
Yeah, but again, because of your activities, the body becomes hungry again.
That's a good point, yeah.
Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
I'm just adding to that point. I'm just thinking it would be also maybe because of our independence that we want to stay here and enjoy the material world, you know, that we're not satisfied.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though devotees are serving.
But the point of this Jasmin Tustijagat Tustat is he says the whole universe becomes satisfied. And that's true. The universe becomes satisfied, but because of these material desires, because they're not fulfilled, or because they're not, you know, because of our material proclivity, then again dissatisfaction will come. Just the nature. Until we get to the point of accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that I am His servant and my only business is to serve Him and to please Him, until we can actually come to that point, that realization, we will continue to be dissatisfied in one way or another. And so the only way ultimately to achieve satisfaction is by serving Krishna. Yes, Maharaj.
Thank you. Hare Krishna Prabhu, thanks for the nice class. And as you said, like people who are engrossed in sense gratification, it's very hard to make them understand the goal of life.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to preach my friends, and most of them, like you can understand, like they don't want to take it up, but yeah. Some are very, like they don't know what they are doing, but they're very pious, but at the same time they don't want to accept this, accept the goal of life, like they don't understand, and how to make them understand.
There's an interesting saying, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Yes. So you can't force anyone. Our duty is simply to present Krishna consciousness to as many people as we can in the best way we can do it. Try to present in a way that makes it attractive to them. Not that we change the philosophy to make it attractive, but we present the pure philosophy through whatever means we can. To try to, just like, you know, nowadays yoga preaching is quite popular because people want to do yoga. So you do teach them yoga, and at the same time you give them Bhagavad Gita. But you can't, you know, what is it? Vaisheshika sometimes says, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink. You can lead a man to knowledge, but you can't make him think. Yeah? So, you know, our duty is to present Krishna consciousness. But as Krishna says in the second chapter of the Gita, you have the right to perform your duty, but you're not entitled to the fruit of the results. Never consider yourself the doer of the activity, and don't be attached to not doing your duty. So, you can go out there and present Krishna consciousness, but it's up to them whether they take it or not. It's also up to Krishna in their heart. You know, Mata Smriti Gyanam Apanam Cha, whether he inspires them, whether he helps them to remember who they are. Don't be attached to the outcome. You have no control over the outcome, whether the person takes or not. Our duty is simply to go out there and present Krishna consciousness as enthusiastically as we can. And the more we can become transparent, the more we can simply act as a servant of Krishna, then the more we'll be effective. But there's no guarantee of that, because it's up to Krishna and it's up to the will of the individual living entity.
And some are attached to me and they say, for your satisfaction, I will chant one mantra a day like that.
Good. Yeah. That's good, because you know they don't realize what they're doing to themselves when they do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
As soon as they vibrate the name of Krishna, their life changes. It's like Prabhupada would sometimes say we have to inject the Krishna conscious poison into their dull wood-like brains. And it's like a virulent poison. Once a poison comes into the body, it spreads throughout the whole body and you can't do anything about it. So as soon as they chant the holy name of Krishna, they're finished.
Thank you.
It may take, you know, a short time, it may take a long time. But if they chant the name of Krishna, their material life is finished.
Thank you, Prabhu.
But don't be attached to the outcome. Just do your duty. Okay? Thank you very much for the Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhakti Rindiki. Chaini Tai Go Premanandi.